So this evening I'd like to talk about our emotional life and how we approach healing our emotional life within the context of Dharma practice. Emotions are a felt experience. The energy of our emotional life can be intense or high, often with anxiety, with pain, with anger or in grief. It can be like this. And it can also be lower and more subdued, perhaps when we're feeling low or depressed. For many of us, we turn towards spiritual practices and teachings out of recognition that we suffer. We want freedom, we want release, we want to be healed. And mindfulness of our embodied experience is a really profound support for this, in helping us to be with our emotions. Embodied awareness is what really provides balance. It's the quality that helps us find an appropriate balance between energizing and calming factors in our life. Usually when we think of emotions, we think of the high energy emotions that are often difficult to contain, difficult to be with. With the high energy emotions, there's a lot of intensity, and mindfulness practice can really help in that it draws some of the energy out of those experiences. Some of the energy, some of the intensity is taken up by our awareness, by the attention that we give to the experience. So there's that balancing factor coming into play. And then we're more able to observe our experience, be less entangled in it. When our emotional life is less intense, when there's less energy involved, mindfulness can actually help us energize a more dull and lifeless experience. We can really bring our aliveness to those dull, depressed states. Dharma teachings point to the transient and insubstantial quality of all experience. But often our emotional life feels quite stuck. We're caught in anger, aversion, sadness, jealousy, grief. Something's going on here. Something's going on that makes these things feel very solid, very continuous, very dense, rather than arising dependent on causes and conditions. So we've been practicing with the body, this first foundation of mindfulness, and along with our minds, the body is where much of our emotional distress is felt. However, it's not just the felt sense of our emotions that energizes and supports them, but also the stories that we weave around our experience. So the felt sense and the narrative interweave with each other to create a more solid emotional experience. So in our Dharma practice, we don't only want to give attention to the felt sense, the felt experience, or even just to mindfulness itself. We also want to bring our curiosity and our interest to all the unconscious ways in which we see our emotional life. Can we inquire into what our views are about emotions and how we work with them? How do we see the process of healing our emotional life, of getting over things, of adapting to new and changed situations? Do we have to revisit the past? Is that how we see it? Do we have to just feel our emotions more fully? Do we just have to be with them, learn to tolerate them? Do we need to process them? Or do we need to understand them? The way that we think about our emotions will affect how we approach this question of healing our emotional life, healing our emotional wounds. In every moment, whatever kind of experience we're having, we're always relating to that experience in a particular way. Sometimes this is conscious, sometimes less so. And we often think of emotions as coming from the past. And certainly Western psychology has been really important in helping us understand how we are patterned and shaped by our early life experiences. Dharma practice invites us to consider how we are relating to emotions in the present moment. Two common ways in which we relate to our emotions is firstly through grasping, and secondly through aversion. With difficult emotions, we are often aversive, either in subtle or not so subtle ways. And perhaps for some of us, after a number of years of practice or periods of deep inner work, maybe with a therapist or in some other modality, some kind of body work, we might be in a place where we relate more wisely to our emotional life. And whatever stage we're at in our practice, however far we are in our journeys, there's so much more to be learned about skillfully relating to our experience. Because when we relate more skillfully, with more sensitivity, with more delicacy, we can learn not to further compound our own suffering. My own tendency was just to try and get past my emotions, to move beyond them, to disconnect from them. Doesn't work. Sometimes it works. Smaller things. An irritation at work, a harsh word from someone, we can sometimes get over that. Some things take a little more examination. So we have to ask ourselves this question: what does it really mean to heal if we want to approach our emotional life? Are we integrating our emotions? Are we holding our emotions? Are we being alongside them, including them? Emotional healing doesn't mean that we don't have emotions, but rather that we learn to handle what gets presented to us more skillfully. And we could see this as a movement from fear to greater confidence. Painful, intense, or strong emotions often come with a lot of fear. Sometimes the emotions themselves are a response to fear, and sometimes fear is in the background to all of our strategies for managing our experience. It's very counterintuitive to want to feel our emotions. We can be frightened that they will overwhelm us, or they'll be too much, or that we will be too much. Too emotional, too distressed. Almost like we fear these invisible monsters are going to emerge out of the basement and take us over, and we'll be gone. So this movement from fear to confidence in how we work with our emotions, to some degree, comes from a deeper knowing that we have the inner resources to handle our emotions. And this confidence comes not from blind trust, not from a book, not from a website, but from wisely discerning what's really going on. It is learnt through experience, and it's learnt over time, often over many years. So we want to learn this art of relating wisely to our emotional life. And usually our pain and our hurts require that we repeatedly revisit our experiences. In most cases, we're not simply going to meet a painful emotion, only for it to dissolve, never to return again. Our journey is usually much less linear than that. Rather than some kind of straight line, we tend to circle around. We come back around, we encounter the same things again, maybe in a different situation, maybe with a different person. Can we discern ever more wisely how we relate to our emotional life and gradually find a greater freedom. Because we tend to revisit the difficulties in our life time and time again, kindness and patience are so necessary in this journey. And this requires a deep interest rather than aversion. Requires a sensitivity and a care, because we don't want to overwhelm. We don't want to dive in too quickly or too deeply into our most painful experiences. But rather we really want to nourish the body, to nourish the mind, to nourish the heart, so that it is more resourced for this work. And what is truly nourishing also takes some learning. At different times, different things will be required. Time in nature, perhaps, the company of good friends, Dharma talks and teachings. Maybe body work or movement may be required in order to counteract the tendency we have to proliferate thoughts around ourselves and our experience. And if you've noticed, the thoughts we have about ourselves are not usually the most complimentary. Usually judgments, opinions. Nourishing the self is skillful work. Binge watching box sets on TV, scrolling through social media, or numbing ourselves with food or alcohol may offer a temporary reprieve from difficult emotions. But they don't help us cultivate the sensitivity that we need to deeply nourish ourselves. I met with somebody today and they spoke about how nourishing it was simply to walk on the grass, to feel the grass under their feet. Something simple can be so deeply nourishing, and it's important that we really take this time for ourselves. The Brahma Viharas that I spoke of after lunch, these are a really great support for meeting our suffering and allowing us to be with our suffering in more skillful ways. These four qualities of heart and mind that the Buddha spoke of are firstly a support for our awakening, but they're also qualities that naturally arise in the awakened heart. And the word Brahma Vihara gets translated as divine abodes or heavenly abodes, a place where we can make our home, a place where we can rest. And their names in Pali are Metta, Karuna, Mudita and Upekkha. Metta is loving kindness towards oneself and others. Karuna is compassion, that resonance and response we have to the suffering of self and others. Mudita is empathetic joy, the resonance we have with the happiness in oneself and others. And Upekkha is equanimity, the resonance with the stillness, the silence, and the peacefulness in oneself and others in the midst of experience. And these qualities are spoken of as being immeasurable and without limit. They don't exist simply as states of mind, but they can also be consciously developed and embodied, infused into our way of relating to ourselves, relating to others, and relating to the world. And as we start to orient towards these qualities, we might start to feel their presence in our ways of being. There can be a kindness in treading lightly on the earth, on our walking path, on our way to work. We embody compassion towards ourselves by meeting our suffering rather than rejecting it. We can feel joy for the good fortune of another rather than being envious or jealous. And there can be a deep, deep equanimity in learning to be with our experience rather than being pushed around by it. So the Brahma Viharas are very different qualities to the sometimes hardened sense of self that we have. and the inflexible perceptions of other that can arise when we feel disconnected and separate and hurt. When we feel separate from each other, separate from the world. Very often this hardening that we can notice in ourselves gives the appearance of strength. But this isn't true strength. It's actually defensive, it's painful, and it's brittle. And it requires a lot of energy to maintain this. In contrast, the Brahmaviharas, these qualities of heart, really support us in meeting our suffering because they are not solid, because they are not defensive. Instead, they are fluid, responsive, and malleable, and they allow us to meet our experience with less aversion. And I spoke earlier on in the retreat about the need to go beyond the concept of body, beyond the idea of body, beyond the imagination or the image of body. And we also need to go beyond the concept of the Brahmaviharas. We can't simply be content with the idea of kindness or compassion or joy or equanimity. These qualities can be cultivated. We can nurture them. And as they start to grow, we relate to our experience differently. I remember a particularly difficult time in my life at the end of a relationship. There was a lot of pain on both sides, and there was a lot of anger, a sense of hurt, a sense of unfairness about how we'd both been treated. But what really supported me in meeting my experience was walking meditation and using the metta phrases. May I be happy, may I be well, may I be free from suffering, may I live with ease. And I repeated them to myself over and over again, walking backwards and forwards in my garden, out in the street where I lived, on the open space in the parks. In the presence of a really overwhelming hurt and anger. When we cultivate loving kindness, it can really transform our experience. And it wasn't that I didn't experience anger, or I didn't experience hurt, but rather that I saw the danger in not cultivating loving kindness. And not just for myself, for the other people involved. And I also saw the danger in denying or rejecting my feelings. That I was hurt, in pain, or explaining away my anger as being justified. Very often the biggest challenges we face in life are relationships. And intimate relationships in particular can be very challenging. Dharma practice can really support us in relating wisely to our experience, relating wisely with friends, our families, our colleagues, and our romantic partners. Dharma practice can support us in relating wisely with our bodies, handling our sexuality with care and with wisdom. And alongside the Dharma, there are many other ways of healing that are open to us. Often some kind of relational modality is really necessary. A good Dharma friend, a teacher, a psychotherapist. And this was certainly necessary for me to explore multiple ways of healing that went deeper than just strategies and techniques. In the Dharma, there is a lot of emphasis on the idea of not-self. This concept of anatta, which gets translated as not-self, sees that self, rather than being a fixed thing, is an unfolding process. And if we've been immersed in these teachings for some time, we can sometimes be wary of anything that validates a sense of self, particularly if we've heard how it is identification with a sense of self that causes us to suffer. And I touched on this when I spoke on Saturday, I think, that there is a need to include and care for the relative self, but without forgetting its fundamentally empty nature, that self arises dependent on causes and conditions. So our need to attend to the relative self and how we do that will be different at different times, different situations, different relationships, different stages of our life and our practice may ask different things of us. Two words that seem really important to me here, creativity and dynamism. If we take practice as a set of rules that we follow, if we don't engage with it in the midst of our life, in the midst of our embodied experience, it becomes rather wooden, rather dry. So our practice should always be a creative and dynamic engagement with our experience in the moment, with whatever conditions we're facing. We can't simply apply a formula to every situation and hope that it's going to resolve it. But we can develop more skill in relating to our experience and our sense of self. In my psychotherapy practice, very often when clients come to me, they ask me why. Why am I like this? Why am I feeling like this? They often want to know why the way they are. And in our psychologically informed age, we're so susceptible to picking things off the shelf. Oh, it was my parents, it was my school, it was this thing that happened to me. And it's not that our history and our experiences don't have an impact. But I offer my clients a different question. I invite them to consider how it is to be with their experience. And it's not that how is more important than why. Both are valid, both are useful, both can be important. But can we be as interested in the question and the exploration of what it is to be human and what leads to greater freedom? For many of us, there are a few straight lines in our lives. A rarely leads directly to B. In many situations, it would be a gross oversimplification to say that literally because of this one situation in my life, I now feel like this. Because this happened, this is how I am. And so without overlooking the relevance and the importance of our histories and our experience and how they shape our sense of self, can we also recognize complexity and how this sense of self that we take to be us arises dependent on multiple causes and multiple conditions? We can see many examples of linear and simplistic thinking in the world. In the psychotherapy world, there are new therapies that gain a foothold, become popular. All the training courses are sold out. And they claim to have the answer. And we can also see the same in the spiritual world. Different traditions, different teachers, each claiming that theirs is the one true way. Reality is more complex than simple answers might suggest. And I came across a cartoon earlier on in the year, and it's a picture of a line of people coming up to a signpost. And on the top of the signpost it says answers. To the left it says, can I read this, simple but wrong. And on the right hand side it says complex but right. And to the left hand path there's a whole crowd of people going to the edge of the cliff and falling off. And on the right hand side, on the complex but right, there's a winding path with just one or two people on it. Wouldn't it be nice if there were really simple answers? Do this, you'll feel great. Very often we see the world in fixed and solid ways. Dharma teachings invite us to question this apparent solidity. And our task in practice is therefore to explore what feels solid, to find out what is real and what is not. And we also want to question our suffering. On a relative level, it is real. We do experience pain. We will all experience pain and loss. And it feels really solid at a really deep level. And I don't want to underplay the experience of this. I know it in my own life. But it can often feel like there is no possibility, no space for anything to be different. And suffering is usually actually a compound of a number of factors. And I'm falling into the trap of simplifying things here. But firstly, we have unpleasant Vedana. In a moment of experience, in a moment of contact, our experience feels unpleasant, pleasant, or neutral. So when unpleasant Vedana is present, we have an emotional and an embodied experience. And then thirdly, we start to spin a story about the experience. We start to narrate our experience. We start to philosophize and theorize about it. And then wrapped all around the Vedana, the sense of our emotional embodied experience and the narrative that we spin, are wrapped around all of this, a sense of self crystallizes. And we take our suffering to be solid and real, because it feels like that. And all of this appears to play out in linear time. We tend to see our suffering as ultimately real, as solid, as self-existent, and bound by time. And often the task seems to be like, how can I get to the end of it? How long will it take? When will this be over? So it's not surprising that we feel aversive to difficult experiences. It's not surprising that we want to get away or change these. Meditatively, can we investigate our experience? The answer is yes. We want to discover for ourselves that all experience is transitory, and that even though it's transitory, it patterns heart and mind. It impressions body and mind. A series of moments that get strung together and give a sense of continuity. However, if we can simply attend to the moment of our experience, to a moment of our experience, and some of you who've met with me in the small groups or one-to-one, I keep on bringing you back to this moment, this experience. If we can attend to that moment, we can find that the moment itself is workable. That we have the resources to handle a moment of difficulty, a moment of pain, a moment of sadness. But when we become identified, when we see that experience as me, as I, as mine, as who I am, we suffer. Our minds project into the future and we solidify the experience. We make it into a thing, a real, solid thing, far more real than can be known when we actually look more deeply. When we look deeply, we don't find solidity. We find continuously arising experience. When we look more deeply, we can start to see also how perceptions shape our experience and how mind states colour our perception. Just as our suffering often goes unquestioned or unexplored, we often don't examine our perceptions. We believe that we see reality in a completely unfiltered, transparent way. We're seeing it just how it is. And we can be particularly susceptible to this on a meditation retreat, because a lot has got clarified. A lot of our conditioning might have fallen away. We start to see things clearly, we think. And certainly some clarity is usually present. But it's rarely the case that we're seeing things in a completely transparent way. Our perceptions shape our experience of the world. They're part of what creates our emotional experience, as they inform and they fuel the narratives around our experience. This isn't fair. I don't like this. It shouldn't be happening to me. Perceptions are often subtle, almost like a really thin, clear glue that binds together multiple factors and makes things feel really solid and real. When we solidify a view, we solidify a sense of self. And when this happens, there's less freedom and there's less flexibility to explore. There's less of possibility to let our experience unfold in an unhindered and free way. So Dharma teachings and Dharma practice offer us many different lenses through which to examine our experience, through which to examine our emotional life. And so far we've worked with body sensations and the breath. We've used the lens of awareness of the feeling tone of our experience of Vedana. And today we've explored the colouring and texture of our minds, mindfulness of mind states. And each of these lenses helps us see a particular dimension of our experience. They offer us a way of looking that frees us from perceiving in fixed and painful ways. They offer us a way to really meet our experience that's creative, dynamic, fluid, receptive and open. So in our practice, it's often a process of moving backwards and forwards, acknowledging the implicit felt experience, and investigating our subjective understanding of this. Being willing to pause, to slow down, to see what might come, given more time. And our experience often folds in surprising and unpredictable ways. Like I said earlier, it's not a straight line from here to here. Some of us go, dut, 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 dut. Some, dut, 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 dut. Some, dut, dut. We all move in different ways. Healing our emotional life is like this. Each hurt, each pain, each circumstance will unfold differently for each of us in a time that is unique to each. Therefore, we can't compare our progress on the path with others. We don't know what lies ahead of us, what experiences will be offered. What experiences will be presented to us so that we can learn to work with them? So that we can learn to work with them in a way that causes less suffering. And we also can't compare our emotional healing with that of others. So often a sense of shame gets wrapped around the way that we are. We should be different. We shouldn't be anxious. We should feel better. We should feel more capable. So many judgments. And all these judgments are in comparison to either other people, some external standard about how we should be, or our own internal views about what we should be like. Dharma practice actually invites us to meet ourselves right where we are, not how we think we should be or how we'd like to be. And some of you who I've met with individually have been able to explore what it feels like to be contracted and tight. And often there's an experience of release when we meet ourselves with curiosity and interest, with a willingness to really see what's here. And in this release, what we often don't notice, or what's harder to see, is that we also become free from limiting views and limiting perceptions that have invisibly bound us and kept us stuck. Healing our emotional life offers us a more expansive view of the freedom that is available to us. Dharma practice points to an unconstrained freedom, an unlimited freedom, a spaciousness in which all experience can arise. And through our practice, we skillfully release our preoccupations with thoughts, with body sensations, and with all the meanings that we attach to them. When we no longer need to follow or react to our experience, there's no need to dig deeper to find something. Rather, we can acknowledge and rest in the much larger space in which all experience arises and passes. This is simply experience expressing itself. No need to cling to it as I, as me, or as mine. For when we cling, we contract, and when we contract, it's painful, and we suffer. And we give a lot of attention to how we are in our bodies because we can notice this contraction in our bodies. We can notice the hardening, the armoring, the defensiveness, the tightness, the hunching up of the shoulder, the going inwards, withdrawing, disconnecting. But this is a process for us all. We are all on this path. And we will find ourselves clinging. We will contract and we will suffer. And it is also possible for these tendencies to be released. And in that movement of release, can we start to see the dynamic? Can we start to see the movement between contraction and release? Two sides of the same coin. Often the contraction is what we notice, it's what we give our attention to, it's what we want to get rid of. Can we also give as much attention to the release, to what it feels like when that contraction is absent, when it's gone, when it's let go, when it's softened? That experience of release brings freedom, it brings ease. And release liberates the heart and mind from a very self-orientated view of the world. A famous Tibetan teacher, Kalu Rinpoche, he says, "We live in the appearance of things. There is a reality. You are that reality. And when you understand this, you will see that you are nothing. And being nothing, you are everything. That is all." And when I say those words, it's like the hairs stand up on the back of my neck. It's like something really wakes up in me. In the Buddha's teaching, word samsara refers to the world of delusion. This wheel of suffering in which we endlessly repeat if we have no insight into the way things really are. Understanding that our perceptions are habitually distorted. We think, we feel, and we act in ways that reflect this distortion. And as a result, we suffer. And when we see ourselves as a detached observer of our experience, unaffected by our experience, this fuels the distortion. And there's a balance here, because we need a degree of separation so that we're not lost in our experience. But too much separation and we're way out here. We don't even know what's happening. We're dissociated, we're disconnected. If we see ourselves as an objective observer of our experience, with me here, experience there, we see it as out there rather than in here. And there's a separation. So we always want to come close to our experience. Not too close to be overwhelmed, not too close to be lost in it, and not so far away that we're disconnected. Dharma practices and Dharma teachings offer us direct experiential knowing. An unentangled knowing, a knowing that is not fixed in time or space, that does not separate out a sense of me knowing experience. Experience knows itself, ever unfolding, ever changing, always fresh, always immediate, always alive. Almost the moment we start to talk about our experience, we're talking about something that's not happening anymore. It's a truly courageous thing to really meet our experience in the moment. To go against the stream of conventional wisdom and our old habit patterns of avoiding, disconnecting, rejecting, and fearing our emotions. Everything is workable in the moment. The deepest pain, the deepest loss. And that's not to say that we have to do it alone. We often need to be supported in this work. And here on the retreat, the one-to-one interviews, the groups, and this community of practitioners that we are, let alone all the staff, the coordinators, the generosity that sustains Gaia House, all of this supports us in being with our experience. And we also have the qualities of the Brahma Viharas. These really priceless qualities. In this way of meeting our experience, we are open to know life in a way that is prior to concepts, prior to our ideas about it. In a way that is non-conceptual and unconditional. It's non-conceptual because our understanding is implicit and heart-centered. And we meet our experience unconditionally because we were open to the full spectrum of our experience. In all its breadth, in all its depth, in all its beauty, in all its pain. So we don't want to resist anything, and we don't want to reject anything. We don't want to reject our experience because we reject ourselves. And there's a short poem from Rumi that I really love, that I think speaks to some of the mystery of our experience. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. People are walking backwards and forwards at the threshold where the two worlds meet. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. So let's sit for a moment. So now we have a period for walking. Please take this time to walk.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.